So, you're thinking about spray foam insulation. It seems like everyone's talking about it these days, especially here in the UK. And let's be real, trying to sort through all the information out there, articles, forums, government reports, it could feel a bit overwhelming. But you've clearly been doing your homework because you've got a great stack of research here. We've got this really thorough article, everything you need to know about spray foam insulation. Plus, you've got some interesting discussions from online forums. Always good to hear different perspectives. And wow, a UK government report. Now that's dedication. Don't worry, we're not here to tell you what to think. Our mission today is to help you unpack the most important facts and perspectives from the research you've already done. Think of us as your guides on this deep dive into the world of spray foam insulation. By the end, you'll be well equipped to make the best decision for your home. Now let's start with the basics. That Everything You Need to Know article is a really good starting point. It does a great job of explaining what spray foam actually is.
What's fascinating is that it all starts with this liquid polyurethane, kind of like those expanding foam sealants you might have used around the house. But instead of sealing a gap, imagine this liquid expanding to fill an entire cavity in your walls or roof. When it hits the air, it reacts and expands like crazy, creating a solid insulation barrier.
Right, it's like those dinosaur toys that grow when you put them in water. Except instead of a giant T-Rex, you end up with a super insulated house. But it's not a one-size-fits-all situation. The article mentions two main types of spray foam: open cell and closed cell. And they're actually quite different in terms of how they work and what they're best suited for. Open cell foam, they describe it as having a sponge-like texture. And they're not kidding. It's great for soundproofing. It's kind of like wrapping your house in this big, fluffy sound blanket. And then there's closed cell foam, which is the tough, durable one. It's denser, more rigid, and known for being much better at handling moisture.
And that difference in structure, the open airy cells versus the closed dense cells, is crucial because it directly affects how each type performs. Open cell, being in that airy sponge, is fantastic at trapping air and sound, making your home quieter and more energy efficient. However, it's not as effective at blocking moisture. Closed cell foam, on the other hand, forms a much tighter barrier, making it a champ at moisture control. But here's the thing, this difference also plays a big role when we start talking about the potential downsides, which we'll get to a bit later. Keep that in mind as we go forward.
Okay, so we've got our two contenders: open cell, the sound-absorbing sponge, and closed cell, the moisture-blocking muscle. But why are you even considering spray foam in the first place? Well, that same Everything You Need to Know article lays out some pretty enticing benefits. And let's be honest, anything that combats the UK's infamous dampness has got to be worth a look, right?
Absolutely, that airtight seal we talked about. It's not just great for keeping your home warm in the winter, it's a superhero against moisture. We're talking about potentially saying goodbye to those damp corners, making your home healthier, and even saving you some pounds on those energy bills by keeping the temperature just right.
This article made spray foam sound like the superhero of the insulation world. Install it and forget about it for decades. No more dealing with saggy fiberglass or replacing insulation every few years. But being the savvy researcher that you are, I see you didn't just stop at the sales pitch. Those forum posts you dug up, some of them had you a bit worried, didn't they? I get it. Some of those threads were a bit like reading a home improvement horror story. People were talking about moisture traps, ventilation issues, hidden roof damage, even trouble when they tried to sell their homes. And then there's the whole chemical side of things, isocyanates, VOCs. Yeah, it sounds a bit intimidating, to be honest.
I understand why you'd be concerned, but let's unpack those fears a bit and separate fact from fiction. A lot of these risks aren't actually inherent to spray foam itself. They often come down to things like improper installation or using the wrong type of foam for the specific location and climate. And that's where the government report you found comes in. It offers some really valuable insights.
Ah, yes, the spray foam insulation applied to timber sloped roofs report. It looks a bit daunting, I have to admit.
It's a bit of a hefty read, but trust me, it's worth decoding. What's so helpful about this report is that it digs deep into the specific conditions that can make spray foam a risky choice, especially for homes here in the UK. For example, there's a case study they highlight from Newcastle, you know, where it gets quite humid. In this case, open cell foam was applied directly to a high resistance underlay.
High resistance underlay. For those of us who aren't roofing experts, what does that even mean?
Good point. It's basically like a thick plastic sheet that goes under your roof tiles. It does a great job of stopping water from getting in, but it can also trap moisture if there isn't enough ventilation.
So imagine you've got this humid environment in Newcastle, moisture-loving open cell foam, and a barrier that's about as breathable as plastic wrap. Not a great combination.
Exactly. The report found that this particular combination significantly increased the risk of moisture building up in the roof, which can eventually lead to timber decay and all sorts of problems.
So it's not just about choosing the right type of spray foam. It's about understanding how it interacts with what's already there. The underlay, the climate, the whole picture is starting to make a lot more sense now.
And it gets even more interesting when the report looks at closed cell foam under similar conditions. Even though closed cell foam is better at handling moisture, the report found that there can still be problems if it's not installed correctly.
Oh, really? I thought closed cell was supposed to be the more moisture-resistant option.
It is. But the report highlighted a case where closed cell foam was applied directly to the underside of roof tiles without any underlay at all. Even though closed cell foam is less permeable to moisture, trapping it directly against the tiles without any breathing room is still asking for trouble.
So it sounds like no insulation is completely foolproof. It's all about using the right material for your specific roof and making sure it's installed properly.
Exactly. And speaking of installation, there's one more point from this report I think is especially relevant here. It's about what happens when spray foam is applied in lofts that already have existing insulation.
Okay, yeah, good point. A lot of UK homes, especially older ones, they've already got some kind of insulation up in the loft. So what's the problem with just adding spray foam on top?
Well, what they found is if you apply spray foam directly over old loft insulation, especially that fluffy stuff, you're essentially creating what they call a moisture sandwich. And you do not want a moisture sandwich in your roof.
Okay, moisture sandwich. That sounds like a recipe for disaster. Why is that such a problem?
Imagine this. You've got your roof tiles. Then a layer of old insulation could be anything, really. And then we come in and add spray foam on top of all that. What happens? It's like wearing a thick wool sweater on a hot summer day. You're just trapping heat and moisture between the layers with nowhere for it to escape.
Ah, so it's all about breathability. That moisture's got to go somewhere or it's just going to cause problems, right?
Exactly. And this moisture sandwich situation, the report specifically linked it to a higher risk of mold growth, especially when open cell foam was used with those less breathable, high resistance underlays we talked about earlier, just a recipe for trouble.
So if you've got old insulation in your loft and you're thinking about spray foam, it sounds like factory in the cost and effort of removing that old insulation first is crucial.
Absolutely. It's not just a matter of adding a layer. You're potentially creating a whole other set of problems if it's not done properly.
That makes a lot of sense. It's about that balance, isn't it? Getting the benefits of spray foam without accidentally creating new problems.
Precisely. And while we're on the topic of balance, there's one other thing from the report I think is worth pondering. The report focuses heavily on moisture, which is obviously crucial, but it does briefly mention the environmental impact of spray foam insulation.
Right, and it's something more and more people are thinking about these days, and rightly so. What does the report have to say about the environmental side of spray foam?
Well, it acknowledges that while some manufacturers are making progress in using more eco-friendly blowing agents, the production and disposal of spray foam can still have a significant carbon footprint, especially compared to some of those alternative insulation materials out there.
So it's a bit of a trade-off then. Spray foam might be a good choice for saving energy and reducing your heating bills in the short term, but it's crucial to consider the bigger picture, the long-term impact on the environment.
Absolutely. It all comes down to making informed decisions, weighing the pros and cons, and figuring out what aligns best with your values and priorities.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So where does all this leave us? We've explored the science behind spray foam, uncovered some of its superhero qualities and its potential downsides, and we even decoded a government report together. What are some key takeaways for our listeners as they navigate this whole insulation adventure?
Well, I think the most important takeaway is that every home is unique. There's no magic, one-size-fits-all answer when it comes to insulation. The best approach is to carefully consider your specific needs, your budget, your priorities, and of course, your home's unique quirks.
Right. You've already done a lot of the hard work gathering all this research.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's about applying that knowledge to your specific situation. If you're leaning towards spray foam, definitely get multiple quotes from different installers, and don't be afraid to ask them specific questions about your underlay, any existing insulation you have, ventilation, all the things we talked about today.
And if you're still feeling unsure, don't rush into anything. It's always worth exploring some of those alternative insulation options mentioned in your research. Things like mineral wool or even sheep's wool insulation. They can be very effective and might have a lower environmental impact. It's all about finding the best fit for you.
Well said. Knowledge is power, and you've definitely armed yourself with a wealth of information today. We've covered a lot of ground on this deep dive into spray foam insulation. Hopefully you're feeling more confident and informed about your insulation options.
And remember, the learning doesn't stop here. That environmental impact we touched on, that's definitely something to keep in mind as you continue your research. Think about the long-term sustainability of different insulation materials, do a little more digging, and see what feels like the best fit for your home and for the planet.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of spray foam insulation. We'll see you on the next one.